Okay, I want to start into the book of Revelation. And one of the first things I want to deal with, you know, when we start, John says in the chapter 1, right off the bat, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day, in the Lord's day. You remember that statement? He moves us from a character of the day to the event of the day. Now, the day of the Lord puts the word Lord in the genitive case in the Greek, the genitive case, okay? In other words, it tells us what kind of day is it? What kind of day? It's the day of the Lord, and the word Lord is the last word there, okay? In the New Testament, in the book of Revelation, the Lord's Day puts the word Lord, Lords, as first, and it's in the dative case in the Greek. Now, that doesn't mean much to many of you. Many of you don't know the cases in the Greek. But it answers the question, when? When am I here? When? I'm here in contrast to man's day. I'm here on the Lord's day. See? The time, man's day is the time when man is dominant. The Lord's day is the time when God is dominant. God is dominant. There are several differences between the day of the Lord and the Lord's day. However, they are equal in what they mean. I'll explain that in a minute. The Lord's day, the emphasis is on the word day. Day, because that's the Lord's day. Lord is first, day is last. Okay? It directs the emphasis to the word day rather than to the word Lord. So he's in the Spirit on a certain day. What day was that? It's the Lord's day. It's the Lord's day. Now, the difference is in the order of the words. So if you take the whole sentence, it would read something like this. I came to be in the Spirit. He says, in the day, in the Lord's day. Or he could say, I came to be in the Spirit in the day of the Lord. Instead of saying, in the day of the Lord, he says, I came to be in the Spirit on the Lord's day. So when we use both of them, we put them together. If you put both the Lord's day and the day of the Lord, you have the Lord first, and you have the Lord last, right? The word Lord is first, Lord's day, and you have the word Lord as the last word of that. However, they are very much equal in meaning, but there's a slight emphasis that John wants us to understand. Now, you have this passage, you'll see it. I'm going to quote it in the Greek rather than in the English, which is a little bit more difficult. You know, you have to make things smooth in English, okay? So let's take a look. In Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, he says, you know, I have been crucified with Christ. You know, I've been crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me, okay? That's not how the Greek reads. So if you read the Greek, here's what it says. Christ together with have I been crucified. Yet I live, no longer I, but the one who lives in me is Christ. So in that sentence you have Christ is the first word of that sentence, and Christ is the last word. He is the first and the last in that sentence too. So let's be sure we understand that the change from the day of the Lord to the Lord's day does not change the meaning or the sense of what we're talking about. Man's day or the day of man are the same thing, the same day, right? If you said Lot's wife, or you said the wife of Lot, which is really what the Hebrew says when you look at it, they are the same thing. It's not a different person. It's not a different meaning. Yet many people try to take that and move it into, oh, that means Sunday. That means it does not. It does not. Listen to this phrase. Does God's house, is that the same as the house of God? Well, yes. Look at Genesis chapter 28 and verse 22. It says, the stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. That's Genesis chapter 28, verse 22. And of all that you gave me, I surely will give you a tenth. Now, that's the same thing as in Genesis 28 and verse 17. Drop down back to verse 17. It says, he was afraid and he said, how awesome is this place? There is none other, this is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. So Genesis chapter 28, verse 17 says house of God. Verse 22 says God's house. Are we talking about the same house, or are we talking about two different meanings? The same house, the same way. So the Lord's day and the day of the Lord, they're the same. Look at this one. What about the Lord's people? You know that phrase is used in 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 24. When Eli was talking to his sons and he says, my sons, for the report is not good which I hear the Lord's people circulating. That's 1 Samuel chapter 2 and verse 24. That's from the New International Version of the Bible. But it's the same as verse 11, which says, this is Judges 5 and verse 11. At the sound of those who divide flocks among the watering places, there they shall recount the righteous deeds of the Eternal, the righteous deeds of his peasantry in Israel. Then the people of the Eternal, the people of the Lord, went down to the gates. Now, are the people of the Lord the same as the Lord's people? Well, of course. And so the Lord's day is the same in meaning as the day of the Lord. Of course it is. Everyone would say that if I said Christ's gospel, you would say that's equivalent to the gospel of Christ. Everyone would say, there's no question about it, if we said Christ's sufferings, that you would understand it to be the same as the sufferings of Christ. Okay? But what John is telling us is, I was in the Spirit in the Lord's day. I'm going to tell you where that I was. There's a certain place, a certain time I was there. And where was it? It was the day. Emphasis on that particular day. So what you read in Revelation is very much talking about that great time in the Old Testament, which had not been fulfilled, but John's saying, hey, I'm going to be there that day. All right, that's one of the issues of the we need to clarify. Now, I'd like to come back to Revelation chapter 12. I want to deal with the significance of the 1,260 days, the 42 months, and the 3.5 years. And the Bible talks about all of these. 1,260 days, 42 months, and time, times, and half a time, which is 3.5 years. In Revelation chapter 12 and verse 6, then the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared by God so that there she would be nourished for 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years or 42 months. Any way you want to slice it. This harkens back to the book of Daniel. The book of Daniel talks about this a lot, about the saints and time, times, and half a time. But first I want to read this very encouraging place, Daniel chapter 7. Then we'll talk, and I want to read verses 13 through 16. You'll know the end result first. He's giving you the end of what's going to happen first. This is Daniel 7. Dropping down to verse 13. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man was coming. And he came up to the Ancient of Days and presented before him Okay, he was presented before the Ancient of Days. So you have the Son of Man coming up to the Ancient of Days, which it looks like we're talking about Christ, the resurrected Christ, and to the Father. And to him was given dominion, that's to the Son of Man, glory, and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and persons of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. Once God's kingdom comes, that's it, never to be destroyed. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me, and he made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, you know, Daniel was seeing these beasts, which are four in number, are four kings which will arise from the earth. But listen to verse 18. But the saints of the highest one, or the most high, will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom. Doesn't matter how many of these kings come up, these Gentile kings, these wild beasts. It doesn't matter. The saints of the kingdom, the saints of the Most High, will receive the kingdom, because the Son of Man receives the kingdom, and the saints are with him, and they will possess the kingdom forever, for all ages to come. That's the New American Standard Version rendition of Daniel chapter 7, verses 13 through 18. What a wonderful and encouraging thing. God's saints, you, I, our loved ones who died in Christ, are saints. We're going to possess the kingdom, and we're never going to give it up, and no one will ever take it away from us. Why? Because the Son of Man has it. But let's drop down further into chapter 7 of Daniel. Before all of us can have the kingdom, there's going to be time, times and a half a time. And you see it in verses 25 and 26. He's talking about this person that speaks out. He's an evil person. He speaks out against the Most High. And he will wear down the saints of the Most High, the highest one, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into the hand, his hand. They, the saints, will be given into his hand for how long? A time? That's 1 year. Times? That's 2 more years. That's 3 years. And a half a time? That's 3.5 years. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. So we know the end. We know the end of the story. Okay, you know the end of the story. The end of the story is God will conquer and rule, and the saints will rule with him. And we see other places of this time and half a time. For instance, in Daniel chapter 12. I heard the man dressed in linen, and this is verse 7, Daniel chapter 12, verse 11, verse 7. I heard the man dressed in linen who was above the waters of that river, of the river, as he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and he swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. And as soon as they finished shattering the power of the holy people, that 3.5 years, 3.5 years is what God's people have experienced, will experience time and again, 3.5 years, persecution, times and half a time, shattering the power of the holy people. All these events will be completed when the holy people have been prosecuted, persecuted, and driven. And so you see in chapter 12, we just read that in verse 6, Revelation chapter 12 and verse 6 now, and the woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared so that she would be nourished for 1260 days. She's going to be nourished there. Because who was after her? The dragon. The dragon was after her. Chapter 12 and verse 14, dropping down a little bit. But two wings of the great eagle were given to the woman so that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. We're going to talk more about the wilderness and her place, where she was nourished for a time. There again, we're coming to that. Now notice that the 1260 days in verse 6 come up to a time, times, and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So she's nourished to get away from the serpent who is following her and trying to persecute her. Now we have to ask the question, does this age, end age, begin, maybe climax, does it begin from the resurrection of Christ? Because in chapter 12 of Revelation, in verse 5, we read this, "And she gave birth to a son, a male child, who is to rule all nations with a rod of iron. And her child was caught up to God, to his throne." There's the resurrection of Christ. Okay? She gave birth to that male child. That's Jesus. And he's going to rule all nations. We know the end. We know the end of the story. The end of the story is God is going to conquer. Christ will rule all nations. And all of our dead in Christ. And here's what it says in chapter 14. It's going to come into his final appearance. When he comes with his final appearance, and you see it in chapter 14, verses 13 through 20. I'll read that. "And I heard a voice from heaven say, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, so that they may rest from their labors, for their deeds follow with them. Then I beheld, then I looked, and behold, a white cloud." Is this like an instant here? The dead in Christ, they're dead. They die in the Lord, they're blessed, and they will rest from their labors. But then he said, "I looked and looked. Behold, a white cloud, and sitting on the cloud was one like the Son of Man." Here's the end of the story. "Having a golden crown on his head and a sharp sickle in his hand. And another angel came out of the temple, crying out with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud. And he says, put in your sickle and reap, for the hour to reap has come, because the harvest of the earth is ripe. Then he who sat in the cloud swung his sickle to the earth, and the earth was reaped. And another angel came out of the temple which is in heaven, and he also had a sharp sickle. Then another angel, the one who has power over fire, came from the altar and called out with a loud voice to him who had the sharp sickle, and cried out to him that had the sharp sickle, saying, put your sharp sickle and gather the clusters from the vine of the earth, because her grapes are ripe. So the angel swung his sickle to the earth and gathered the clusters from the vine of the earth and threw them into the great wine vat of the wrath of God. Here comes the wrath of God coming now on the people of disobedience who would not turn from the beast and would... that were very willing to receive his number and his name and all that and follow him. And here comes the wrath of God. Throw them into the winepress of the wrath of God, says verse 19. Now verse 20. The winepress was trodden outside the city, and the blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for a distance of 200 miles. Wow. Now I don't know, can you take all those numbers literally? Are they literal? I tend to go with literal until I sure that it's a metaphor. But look at, here again, once again, we got 42 months, 3.5 years, 1,260 days. Now, Israel wandered in the wilderness, some say 40 years, some say 42 years, if you look very careful. Most of the 3.5 years that are mentioned in the Bible, most of the 3.5 years have to do with persecutions against God's people. Most of those 3.5 years. Now, if you remember, the Jews fled Jerusalem for 3.5 years of persecution under Antiochus Epiphanes. That was a sort of a partial fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy, Antiochus Epiphanes. He says they went down to secret places in the wilderness and to escape their pagan enemy that pursued them. Maccabees, and I bought this New English Bible a long time ago, and it comes with the Apocrypha. In the Apocrypha, it doesn't mean that they are all bad books or that they have no value. What it means is they're just not inspired by the Holy Spirit, and they were not included in the canon of the Old Testament. Okay, First Maccabees is considered a very fine, first-class historical book. I'm going to read you First Maccabees chapter 2, and I'm going to drop down chapter 2, and I'm going to drop down to verse 22. I believe, 22. And I'm going to read from verse 22 to 30. First Maccabees 2, verse 22. I'll start in verse 1. To this Matthias replied in a ringing voice, though all nations within the king's dominion obey him and forsake their ancestral worship. Now, what Antiochus Epiphanes was trying to do, he was trying to get the Jews to turn from their religion and worship a false god, make sacrifices to a false god. He even took swine's fat and swine blood and threw it on the altar to try to say, oh yeah, you're so particular, you don't want pigs. Well, look at this, and I'm going to throw swine's blood on the altar. And he just was doing terrible things to force the Jews away from their religion. But Matthias, one of the brothers of the Maccabees, who really dominated here, and he said, they want to get us to forsake our ancestral heritage, our worship, though they have chosen to submit to his commands. They're submitting to his commands. Yet I and my sons and brothers will follow the covenant of our father. Heaven forbid that we should abandon the law and the statutes. We will not obey the command of the king, nor will we deviate one step from the forms of worship. They were not going to submit to the king's thing. As soon as he had finished saying this, a certain Jew stepped up forward in full view of all the people there to offer a sacrifice on the pagan altar of Modin. In obedience to the royal command. In other words, this Jew says, I'm going to follow what Antiochus Epiphanes says. I'm going to do what he says. I'm not going to follow you guys. I'm going to submit to the king. The sight of this Jew, after Matthias had just declared, we're not going to submit to it, even if they kill us, we're not submitting. The sight of this Jew going there and offering this thing to the pagan idol just infuriated Matthias. And so what it says here, the sight stirred Matthias to indignation. He shook with passion, and in a fury of righteous anger, he rushed forward and slaughtered the traitor at the very altar. He killed that Jew. At the same time, he killed the officer who stood by, the officer sent by the king to stand by the sacrifice, and he pulled the pagan altar down. Thus Matthias showed his fervent zeal for the law, just as Phinehas, had done so in killing Zimri at that time. Follow me, Matthias shouted to the people. Follow me, he shouted. to the town. Every one of you who is zealous for the law and strives to maintain the covenant, he and his sons took to the hills, leaving their belongings behind in the town. They just left. We're leaving all our stuff. We're running. At the same time, many who wanted to maintain their religion and law went down to the wilds to live there, the wilderness. And they took their sons, their daughters, their cattle with them, for their miseries were more than they could bear. Word soon reached the king's officers and the forces in Jerusalem, or the city of David, that men who had defiled the king's order had gone down into hiding places in the wilderness. A large body of men went quickly after them, and they slaughtered them on the Sabbath. Now, here's one of the things they learned. They were going to keep the Sabbath so strictly that they didn't want to fight. So these people waited till the Sabbath came, and they knew that these people would not fight on the Sabbath. So what did they do? They slaughtered them. And finally, the Matthias and his sons, and they came to a conclusion. If we won't fight on the Sabbath, all the Jews will be wiped out. All they have to do is wait for the Sabbath, come in and kill us, and we just sit there like, you know, I'm sorry, I can't pick up a weapon on the Sabbath. It's the Sabbath. We got to rest. We got to not raise our hand. And so he said, this is not sane. We're all going to be slaughtered. We're all going to be wiped out. They went into the wilderness. They fled to places in the wilderness to save themselves. I won't read more of that, but there's a lot more if you read the book of 1 Maccabees, and even 2 Maccabees is not quite so good as 1 Maccabees. 1 Maccabees is considered a very good, strong, historical book. They that loved the synagogues, you know, and were the pious, they fled from Jerusalem for 3.5 years after the Roman invasion by Pompey, and they wandered in deserts. They wandered here and there in the deserts. Where do God's people flee? Well, you can't be in the town that's controlled by the forces of the evil prince. And so you got to run, and you got to flee. Daniel's prophecy found fulfillment again during the New Testament times. Have you ever heard of a group called the Ebionites, Ebionites? It means the poor ones, Ebionites, they're poor ones. They were mostly Jewish Christians in Jerusalem. They had been poor. Remember what Paul said? He wanted to send to the poor saints in Jerusalem. They were poor because they were ostracized from the Jewish community. And nobody would trade with them. They wouldn't sell to them. They wouldn't buy from them. Their businesses went belly up and broke, so they were very poor. Because the Jews who believed against Christ, they believed that Christ was a deceiver and all that, and they'd been persuaded by the Pharisees and the Sadducees and all the authorities of the Jewish religion that Jesus Christ was a deceiver, he was a liar, he was a false prophet, he was everything. But these people who knew Jesus and came to believe in him, you know, were being persecuted by the Romans. Go after them. So they fled Jerusalem. You remember Jesus' statement. They fled Jerusalem to a place called Pella during the 3.5 year Roman siege. Eusebius says this. It should also be noted that the prediction of this event and similar events during the time began in the New Testament. These are Jesus' words. They begin with Daniel's prophecy. I'm going to turn, first of all, to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew 24 and beginning in verse 15. And Jesus is talking about this. You know, he gives a whole bunch of things. But then he says, therefore, now he's coming back to Daniel's prophecy. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet. It was spoken about through Daniel the prophet. If you see that abomination standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. And it's referring to Daniel 9, verse 27. Daniel 9 and verse 27. And this is where Daniel says, verse 27, you know, they're going to take there, and that abomination will be there, and the prince who is to come will destroy the sanctuary, and that's verse 26, and will end up in the flood to the war, you know, trying to desolate and trying to wipe out God's people. So, Jesus' statement, when do you flee? He says, when you see what was spoken of by Daniel the prophet. So again, here's a reenactment, a refulfillment. Revelation has it. When the woman flees into the wilderness, Jesus told us about it here. Then those that are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Mountains can be wilderness. Mountains can be just, you know, desolate. Flee to the mountains. Get out of here. Whoever is on the housetop must not come down to get things, just as the Maccabees did, just as they did at the time of the Maccabees. They fled, they left everything in the towns. They left everything. You must not come down to take anything out of the house. That's what they did then. Under Antiochus Epiphanes, they ran, they had to go. I can't take time, I want to save my life. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are pregnant in those days. And if you have to flee, you don't want to be pregnant. That's very tough. Very tough. It doesn't mean you shouldn't get pregnant. But we use this in another church that I knew of. They thought it was coming in our time and all this stuff. And a lot of people didn't want to have children because, well, we're going to flee in 1972 or something like that. It just became silly. And people postponed having children as a result. Woe to those who are pregnant. Now, yeah, it is. Anytime you're pregnant and you've got to run, that's not easy. And to those who are nursing babies in those days, well, of course. If you have to run and you're not going to get adequate water, you're not going to, so it's very difficult. But pray that your flight may not be in the winter or on the Sabbath day. You don't have to flee on the Sabbath day. You know, you're going to be known by the other Jews. Say, hey, they're not resting. What are they going? What are they doing? It'd be obvious. For then, verse 21, then shall be a great tribulation, such as has not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. We have to be sort of understanding about this. This is a Hebrew idiom. Verse 21 is a Hebrew idiom. It occurs many times in the Bible, in various places. I'll quote a few of them so you understand. It's a Hebrew idiom that just means it's really a big event. That's all it means. It cannot be taken literally any more than you say, give me a minute, and you mean 20 minutes. Or you say, I'll be there in a few, I'll be there in a moment. Well, you're not there in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. You say, I'll be there. We just have these colloquial expressions not to be taken literally. And Hebrew idioms were also there not to be taken literally. Because you take it literally, then it's just not so. Take a look at some other places in the Bible where you have this Hebrew idiom. For instance, in Exodus chapter 10 and verse 14. You see, they invaded, I'm going to read it now, I'm reading it from the New International Version. They invaded all Egypt and settled down in every area of the country in great numbers. Never before had there been such a plague of locusts, nor will there ever be again. So, Exodus 10. Never before had there been such a plague of locusts, nor will there ever be again. Well, there have been big plagues of locusts. But it's not to be taken literally. It's just a Hebrew idiom. Here you'll see it here and again in Exodus chapter 11 and verse 6. There will be loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than there has ever been or ever will be again. Say again, it means it's a very bad situation. Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 7. How awful will the day, you know, the day of Jacob's trouble. None will be like it. It will be a time of Jacob's trouble, yet he will be saved out of it. You know, and it says what? That there will be no day like that ever. There will be no time like that ever before or ever again. Daniel chapter 12 and verse 1. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of the nations until then. And then in Joel chapter 2 and verse 2. A day of darkness, a day of gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness, like dawn spreading across the mountains, a large and mighty army comes, such as never was of old or ever will be in the ages to come. Now again, that large army is locusts. And yet, you see, you can't take that literally, because then you have the other one in Exodus saying the locusts will never be a locust plague that like that again. So verse 21 is a Hebrew idiom. Verse 22, unless those days had been cut short, no life would be saved, but for the elect's sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Then if anyone says to you, behold, he's here, or Christ is here, he's there, do not believe him, for false Christs and false prophets will arise and show great signs, and if possible, they will mislead the very elect. Behold, I've told you in advance, so that, behold, he is, listen, so if they say to you, behold, he is in the wilderness, do not go out there. Behold, he is in the inner rooms, do not go there. For just as the lightning comes from the east to the west and flashes to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. It's describing the coming of the Son of Man, and so on. So wherever the corpse is, the vultures will be gathered together. Okay, so we have the start of it has to do with Daniel's prophecy. We do know that during the extension of the same New Testament period, the church, like the Old Testament Israel in the wilderness in Judea at that time of Antiochus, is to be tested again. And Revelation talks about that. It's to be tested and persecuted, yet spiritually protected again. And so that we have the continuing fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy. And you'll see it here. Look at Revelation chapter 13. They, meaning the world, they worshiped the dragon because he had authority from the beast. You know, he gave they worshiped the dragon because he gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast saying, who is like the beast? Who can make war, who wage war with him? Now verse 5, this is Revelation 13, verse 5. There was given to him a mouth speaking arrogant words and blasphemies and authority to act for how long? 42 months was given to him. And he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God, to blaspheme God's name, his tabernacle, that and those who dwell in heaven. He's going to blaspheme the angels. It was also given to him, here's now verse 7, to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Saints will be slaughtered. Saints will have to flee. And authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. He will... For 42 months, he will have this power, and he will make war with the saints during that time. Yeah. So every place we see in the Bible, or not every place, but the vast majority of places that talk about three and a half years, or 42 months, or 1,260 days, almost every one is going to talk about the persecution. And people have to flee. Where does the church flee? It flees into the wilderness. Where is the wilderness? And notice, there's a place. We'll talk more about this next time, because I don't want to go too much over time. But Revelation 12 and verse 6. Then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared by God. What is that place? So that there would, so there she would be nourished. 1,260 days she would be nourished. The woman, which is the great church, the whole church, will not be destroyed. It can never be destroyed. Jesus said it, you know, I will build my church and the gates of the grave will cannot overcome it, cannot destroy it. So we know the end of the result. We know the end of the story. Now, the object of Satan's attack is the temple. That's where he attacks. You remember what Revelation chapter 11 said, measure the temple, measure the outer port, right? It's going to be given over to the Gentiles for 42 months, and they'll trod it down. And so the object of Satan's attack is the temple of God. And the temple of God also includes what? The church is the temple of God. So he's going to try to attack the temple. I'm going to read you chapter 8 of Daniel. Chapter 8, verse 9. Beginning in verse 9. Chapter 8, verse 9. Out of one of them came a small... Out of one of them came forth a small horn, which grew exceedingly great toward the south, toward the east, and toward the beautiful land, that's Jerusalem and Israel. It grew up to the host of heaven. This horn grew up to the host of heaven and caused some of the hosts and some of the stars to fall to the earth. And it trampled them down. It magnified itself. It even magnified itself to be equal with the commander of the host. And it removed the regular sacrifice from him, and the place of his sanctuary was thrown down. Satan wants to attack the temple of God, whether it's the physical temple, but primarily he wants to attack the temple of God, which is us, the church, us, Christians, all Christians who love God, who dedicate themselves to Jesus Christ. He wants to attack the Christian church, the Christians' people. And on account of the transgression, verse 12, on account of the transgression, the host will be given over to the horn along with the regular sacrifice, and it will fling truth to the ground. Fling truth to the ground and perform its will and prosper. The evil will prosper during that time. Then I heard the Holy One speaking to and another Holy One said to that particular one who was speaking, how long will the vision about the regular sacrifice apply while the transgression causes horror so as to allow both the holy place and the host to be trampled? How long will this be? And, you know, he tells them. He tells them. I think it's 1,100 days and so on. But here in the Revelation chapter 11, you remember we talked about the same ideas presented. I'm going to read it, Revelation 11, 1 and 2 again. Then there was given me a measuring rod like a staff, and someone said, get up and measure the temple of God and the altar and those who worship in it. Leave out the court, which is on the outside of the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the nations. They will tread it down the holy city for 42 months. So they're going to tread down the holy city. They're going to do these things. They're going to persecute. And all of it has to do with that 3.5 years, time, and half a times, 42 months, or 1,260 days, however you want to say it. It's all, you know, basically the same thing. We'll talk more about this book and the place prepared. God has a place. Do you know where that place is? God has a place. We thought it was Petra. I think there's a better place than that. God has a place prepared. I want to show you how the Bible deals with this word. And we will talk more about that in another sermon.